part of the conversation, send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Well, it is a good evening to you, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is a Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. Thank you so much for staying with us. The number that you can use to talk to us, it is +27 73 470 3520. In case you may not have that number, but maybe you do need a reminder, it is a +27 73 470 3520. And if you're listening to us here in South Africa, you don't need to use that plus. You can just send a message from 073, right? But anyways, thank you so much for joining us. It is a Thursday, one of my favorite days, also because it's quarter to five, but somewhere there. We're just getting closer to the weekend. That is a Thursday. But here on the show, Thursdays are Shapeshifter Thursdays, and today is no different at all. Our shapeshifter today is Asanda Madi, a clinical psychologist and founder of Journal Q, the NetBank Youth X Award winner of 2021. Okay, that's interesting. Specializing in producing mental health tools for individuals who are struggling with existential depression, burnout, anxiety, as well as developing a positive mindset, and those are simply seeking to maintain wellness in their lives. And already from that bio, I think you can already see why she is our shapeshifter this Thursday evening, right? Because there's quite a lot we can chew on there. And I believe she's joining us on the line to talk about this today. But if you do have a question for her, +27 73 470 3520, and we'll make sure that we field those through to her. Good evening, ma'am, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Tapelo. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We really, really appreciate it. And how's things?
Things are well. Okay. Well, it's spring, so it's a good time to be in South Africa.
Ah, definitely. Are you one of those that don't like winter? Because I certainly don't like winter. I think there's something wrong about winter. But anyways, we have to go through it so teeny.
Well, I actually love winter. Spring is just my birth period. So that's why it holds a sentimental place in my heart.
But why would you like winter, though?
It's cozy. You can stay home.
That makes sense.
I also love winter fashion. I think it's easier to dress up than it is to dress down.
Yeah.
So it's just easier to dress in winter.
All right. And then spring is just for, I suppose, sentimental reasons. But if you were to choose, you'd go for winter every day, 365 days a year.
Yes.
I think we should just export you to the West, somewhere there, Europe and all these other countries that don't have summer. You see, I think you'll survive right there, hey?
Yeah, I also think so.
But thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really, really appreciate it. And it is a Thursday, so we do this thing called Shapeshifter Sunday. And what we're trying to do basically is, I suppose, get to a point where we can encourage our young people, right, who are in different situations about the journey that you may have traversed that may be similar to them, so that they can also learn from you as well to say, if you did it or if God did it for you, surely God can do it for them. So that's the first part. But the second part is, there are perhaps other young people that look up to you but can't come to you, can ask you questions for whatever the reasons, right? And so it is about just encouraging young people and sharing your life journey with them and with us as well. And I think some might even relate or resonate with some of the journey aspects that you went through and all those sort of stuff. So that's why this particular part of the show is always an interesting one for me. And so we want to thank you. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate it. So let's go back then. Let's go back. If people ask you, and I know sometimes it's a weird question, and sometimes you answer it 1,000 times, you're like, ooh, I've been asked this question a lot of the times. But when people ask you to Asanda Madi Ubani, how do you respond to that?
Well, you sort of took the words out of my mouth when you did my introduction.
Yeah.
But in short, I am a clinical psychologist.
Yeah.
I'm also the founder of Journal Q.
Yeah.
Journal Q is an online business that curates mental health tools for the purpose of making mental health and wellness practical in everyday life.
Yeah.
So guided journals for different topics like depression, anxiety, grief. And also recently we have launched conversation cues.
Mm.
So just to help people get closer to their loved ones and in a fun and interactive way.
Mm.
I am also very passionate about making psychology principles accessible. I think as someone who has studied psychology, I've seen how it's made my life better.
Yes.
And given me certain insights that I think are very essential for anyone to have a thriving life.
Mm.
And that's why I started my social media platforms.
Yeah.
And that's essentially who I am.
Ah, fantastic. Fantastic. We're going to just chew a little bit on the on your career and the reasons why. And I don't really know a lot about psychology, but I know there's different types of psychology, you know, clinical psychology, industrial psychology and all that. Because I remember my first year we did industrial psychology. I was like, this thing is so difficult. Perhaps I'm not wired to the psychologist, you know, but I struggled through industrial psychology. I said to myself, why am I doing this? Like, no, you have to do it. But anyways, I know there's those types of psychology and we'll talk about that a little bit. Where were you born and what was the environment like?
I was born in Mpumalanga, Ermelo.
Okay.
And I was born into a family with my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
Very loving family, very young mom.
Yeah.
And a mature dad.
Yeah.
The age gap between the two of them was like 17 years.
Okay.
So my dad was more experienced and with my mom, I was her first child and she was 25.
Mm.
I grew up in a small town with minimal exposure to a number of things. I always used to said there was a trend in Johannesburg, then we would probably catch on to it like 3 years later.
I know.
and obviously at that time there wasn't social media.
Yes.
So there was definitely a lag and a small, maybe not small, but a slow childhood.
Yeah.
I would say that in terms of just how mature you get, things that you're exposed to.
Mm.
But I really loved, I loved my childhood. And my brother was born 11 months after me.
Okay.
So we are basically Irish twins.
Yeah.
And we are thick as thieves now.
Okay.
But yes, I loved growing up in my family. I loved having the particular brother that I have, who I think is a blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Now, Emelo, I think is for some, for people who may have read about it, right, quite a small, very interesting town, you know, as you said, in Mpumalanga there. What would you say, if you were to paint it for our listeners who've never been there, how would you paint it in terms of growing up? What were some of the socio-cultural landscape, especially if you were to step outside of your house? Because like you said, you grew up in a family cushioned, you had your mother and your father and your brother and all that. But I'm sure as you stepped out, things were a little bit different. What were some of the socioeconomic challenges, if it were, and what would people see?
Well, Ermelo right now, I think, and even back then, is a transit town.
Okay.
So I think the bulk of the people that live there are people who are brought to the town for work.
Okay.
So whether it's working at Transnet or Sasol with the mines, but a lot of in and out. Mm. So a lot of the people you would see during the week are people who would most probably be gone during weekends.
Yeah.
It is also predominantly Afrikaans.
Okay.
So it has that background as well, generally has a lot of Afrikaans people. The general landscape is, it's a small town.
Yeah.
It's slow in nature.
Mm.
It can be quite recreationally stunted, I think, for children who are growing up there. There's not a lot to do to keep children interested and engaged, which is why I think things like alcohol and dating are also quite common. I think just out of sheer boredom that there isn't a lot to do for children, for teenagers. So Ermelo also falls part of the Gert Sibande district. And that district actually has the highest rates of HIV as a district. So I think it goes to show as well that, I mean, there is a lot of that activity happening. And I really do think it is due to just poor recreational activities to keep teenagers and children engaged. But I think when I grew up, I mean, we made our own fun. You didn't need a lot going on. If you had your friends, you were playing out in the streets. Whereas now I think maybe things are a bit different. Phones and technology has improved and shifted things quite drastically to the extent that I think it would make the poor recreational activity part quite evident and more drastic. But I think that sort of gives an indication of the town. It's very small, but very small.
Ooh, that's lovely. And some of the tourist attractions there?
We don't have any.
Oh, okay.
No, I think, I mean, not in Ermelo. People sometimes people drive through Ermelo to go to Swaziland. But I think in terms of Mpumalanga, tourist attractions could be Nelspruit and also maybe Secunda with Graceland.
Okay.
But I think not in Ermelo per se, but definitely close enough.
So I suppose that's why you characterize it as a transit town, right? People moving or coming there just because of work, but normally they would be coming from outside of Ermelo and all those sort of stuff. All right. Did you go to school there in Ermelo? And if so, how was it?
Yes, I went to primary school in Ermelo, but I went to boarding school in Nelspruit for high school. The school I went to was quite good. It was a school in town. It was an English medium school and quite, I mean, I think at that time, the school had a good reputation for the output of learners that it produced and also the quality of teachers that were there. I think I had a very good education, actually, in primary school.
Okay. And did you, I suppose, struggle going through it in terms of, I suppose, language, especially it being a medium, especially English medium school? Or you, if you come to think about those years, you just like sailed through and it was really nice?
I was raised by two teachers. And I also went to an English medium preschool. So I think in terms of adjustment, it wasn't too drastic. And having the parents that I had and the family that I had who are good proponents of education, I think the adjustment wasn't drastic at all. It was easy to sort of move from preschool to grade zero without too much of a strain. But I think obviously that was because of my environment. It made it easy. I don't even think I struggled. I think the support definitely goes a long way.
And boarding school, how's that like?
Boarding school was fun. It was definitely a culture shock. So Nelspruit is the capital of Mpumalanga. It's bigger. I think generally how I would describe it to people maybe from Gauteng is that it's like a Pretoria. So in terms of how green it is, how warm it is. So it was different. But I really did appreciate it because I think it exposed me to things that I may not have been exposed to at that age.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like how big the world is and how big life could be, applying to universities, those kinds of things that I think I may not have caught on to as quick. But it was definitely difficult. I mean, I was 3.5 hours away from home. I couldn't go home as frequently. I could only go home at the end of the term. So every other weekend, it was like hopping around friends' homes, which is, I mean, I was welcomed in every home, but it can still be difficult because it's not your home. It's not your family. I think that was the most difficult thing. And also that I was the only person from my primary school at the boarding school.
At the boarding school.
And some people had come in with their own alliances and familiarities.
Yeah.
So I had to start from scratch
as
a person who's not really out there or an extrovert.
Okay.
Which was very, very difficult. But I think all in all, it was a worthwhile and fruitful period of my life.
Okay, there's stereotypes about, I suppose, boarding school in and of itself. And then there's stereotypes about people who go to or who went to, you know, boarding schools and all that. What would you say is the one myth that people don't really understand or don't know about boarding school life?
Well, I think the myth or the stereotype could be that people go to boarding school and are wild and uninhibited. I definitely think there are those people. I mean, whether they were home, whether they were at boarding school, they definitely would have been missing out on curfews, staying out late, you know,
as in
whether or not they were at boarding school. But there are definitely people like that, but I don't think it's a general boarding school norm that everyone just goes there to be free and unencumbered by their parents and to just live life and YOLO and you know, and that's, you know, because I know with people, that's where some people start smoking. That's where people start trying out certain things. That those are habits as adults that would have been developed in a boarding school setting. But I definitely don't think that's a norm.
Would you say boarding school children are spoiled brats?
No, we struggle at boarding school.
Okay.
These aren't our parents that are raising us, that are teaching us. These are people who are paid to do so. And obviously they won't care to particular things as much as your parents would. And there's also a lot of you, meaning that some things can go unnoticed for quite some time before they are flagged as concerns or problems. So I definitely don't think we're spoiled. I mean, I do know some boarding schools. So maybe let me say my boarding school, we weren't spoiled. But recently I have been seeing on social media that different calibers of boarding school where people are or live in certain conditions that I think are definitely quite quite wealthy in a way. But my boarding school, no.
Ah, okay. All right. That makes a lot of sense. Clinical psychology. Now, when you got to you know, the grade where you have to choose your stream and where you are going to, I suppose, pursue your studies, did you at high school know that you're going to get into clinical psychology, or what were you hoping to get into or dreaming about getting into at high school?
Sure. I think in grade, maybe between grade 8 and 10, I wanted to be an aeronautical engineer.
Okay.
And then from grade 10 to matric, I wanted to be a software developer or something in IT. I had actually applied for computer science at FITS. I was doing a general BSc. And then for maybe like first 2 weeks of January, I started thinking about, this is now before I went into my first year after matric, I started thinking about the kind of life I saw myself living in 10 years.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, I don't think I will be the kind of person who will be satisfied mm. by being awake at 4 a.m. trying to make a program run mm. Or a code run.
Yes.
And that's when I started taking the educational psychologist's insights yeah. more into regard.
Okay.
We did have an educational psychologist at our school, but obviously at that time I already decided what I wanted.
Yes.
She had suggested psychology as a profession.
Okay.
I hadn't really thought about it, but I started researching it then.
Mm.
I called Vids in a panic trying to see if I could change sure. to now a Bachelor of Arts.
Sure.
Unfortunately, it was too late, but I was advised that I could still migrate into yeah. psychology if I took psychology yeah. as an elective, which is what I ended up doing.
Mm.
So that's how I ended up doing a Bachelor of Science and mm. not a Bachelor of Arts.
Mm.
But yes, no, I think at the beginning, mm. my sights were on something else.
Mm. Okay, would you say it found you if you look at how you got into it?
Yes, I remember telling people in my life that, hey. Okay, actually, I'm pivoting. This is yeah. not what I'm doing anymore.
Yeah.
Everyone just clicked. They're like, yeah, that way it makes way more sense.
Okay. Okay.
And I thought, oh, really? Guys, you could have told me that yes. you all thought I was making a mistake.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of insights from my surroundings mm. that affirmed that I was on the right path.
Mm.
And that was encouraging.
Ah, okay. I suppose then that helped you to go through university, right? And as you're doing the course and, you know, with those type of affirmations and that you're on the right track and all that, did you find the course easier to go through?
Psychology. So remember, I did a Bachelor of Science. So mm-hmm. psychology was just one of my modules.
Okay.
I think it would have been a more enriching experience if I had done a Bachelor of Arts.
Okay.
So that there could have been a lot of links with the other subjects or modules that I was doing throughout my undergrad. So I went from like psychology to physiology to yeah. calculus,
yeah.
which was very different to statistics, which yeah. is very different from if I had done a Bachelor of Arts yeah. where I could have went from anthropology to sociology mm. to developmental studies
yeah.
To psychology, the subjects yeah. that I was doing.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it could have been more enriching, but I still appreciated having done subjects even like physiology
mm.
and understanding how the body works, doing subjects like anatomy as mm. well.
Mm.
I think it was an enriching part, especially because what drew me to psychology initially was the link between the brain and behavior.
Yeah.
So why do people act the way they do?
Sure.
Is it because there are certain brain centers that are stimulated that
yeah.
results in automatic behavior?
Yeah.
Or is it more nuanced? Is it more different
yeah.
or not as simplistic
yeah.
as that.
Mm.
So it was interesting to still do subjects like physiology
yes.
and life science,
yeah.
anatomy, kinds of subjects.
Okay.
But yeah, I definitely think, I mean, either or,
yeah.
I wouldn't change anything about my journey now.
Yeah,
I think even at that time, I didn't really feel like I was losing out on much because there was still a lot of benefits that
yes.
I was getting from the
yes.
path that I had chosen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's really lovely. Have you found the answer to why people do and think the way they do? Because that sounds like an interesting study.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of studies that show connections between
mm-hmm.
maybe a group of behavior and
okay.
particular parts of the brain that are stimulated.
Okay.
For example, with women, certain brain centers that are stimulated more, homosexual men,
yes.
When their brains are taken for scans,
yes.
that certain parts of their brains are bigger than
yeah.
the general like male population.
Yeah.
Or even, I think there was a study done where they showed that with London cab drivers that their frontal lobes generally were bigger than the average population. But that was going to show how London roads are very complicated. And if you have driven as a London cab driver, that part of your brain would be something that you are using. So there are studies that show that people act in a particular way and then their brains develop as a result of it.
Yeah.
And there are some other studies that say the brain is like that and thus it influences behavior. There isn't a consensus yet, but I think there are arguments for both sides.
Do you sometimes sit and look at people, whether friends or in a restaurant, strangers, and they act in a certain way and you're like,
I'm always intrigued by that question because doesn't everyone do that?
I think you do it from an educated point of view, though. We do it and we're like, whatever. Or sometimes we do it with, I suppose, the way social media has grown. People take out phones and and then we laugh it off. But I'm sure you don't just laugh it off. You look at it and like, okay, something here.
No, I definitely do. Maybe I may have more empathy.
Yeah.
But I definitely think everyone sits with people around them and wonders what's happening with this person.
Yeah.
That's how our brains work. Our brains can only feel safe once we understand what we are dealing with.
Yeah.
And how the brain understands things is by categorizing it.
Mm.
So you need to know, oh, I'm interacting with this person. Oh, they're an extrovert. They might ask me to do something I'm uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
Oh, this person is an introvert.
Yeah.
Sure, they're not talking. Hey, I'm going to have to drive this conversation.
Yeah.
We all do that. And that's just your brain's way of getting into any environment and thinking, okay, what's the lay of this land?
Yeah.
What's familiar? What's not familiar?
Yeah.
Oh, I know that behavior. That behavior, that one is a very self-absorbed person. They've been talking about themselves this whole time.
Oh, my.
I think everyone does that, and that's just your brain's way of making you comfortable in an environment.
Yeah.
It has to sort of classify and categorize different people and their different behaviors.
Mm.
So that then helps you know how to act and interact with those say people.
I feel like our parents did it right, but they, like I said, perhaps didn't even know that it was an area of study or academic study or whatever the case might be, because you would hear our parents, "Kin ka wena, yini nga?" You know, like, "Yini nga lo mntwana lo?" You know, so there was always that, like you're correctly saying, we are all intrigued about human behavior to some or other extent, depending on obviously our interest, our training, our, you know, all those sort of stuff. But I'm laughing because I vividly remember a lot of the time when my parents would be like, "Yini nga?" You know, because they see my parents,
what's
like,
wrong?
What's wrong with you? This is not how we act in this house. So I think my mom should have, you know, pursued a career in psychology. But I mean, apparently did them a number of parents. But I think
it was a different time.
You know, it was a different time and opportunities were not there. But I could see her as a psychologist. And she would sit you down and say, try to get to the bottom of why you are behaving like this. And I think she was trying to find an answer, an academic or educated answer around these sort of things. And you would see it even from the way she then treats you after that. You know, you can see, okay, she's learned that my child is like this. And so, you know, to get the best out of him or her, I need to do this and that and that. So I'm saying, I think you're quite right to an extent. We all have some or other interest in how people appear. But I find that people like yourselves who are professional probably just do it as second nature and just look at people and go, this one would be an interesting point of study for my paper. Because this kind of behavior is just so interesting. Anyways, looking at your career now, I know you've done quite a bit of work at the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. You know, you've done a bit of work at Chris Hani. If I'm not wrong, as per what I'm told by my producer, you're at Rahima Musa as well. What are some of, if you were to think of one or two challenges that you've faced so far as a person in this field, what would you say that is?
Sure. I mean, having worked in the South African space, I especially within the Black community.
Yeah.
I think psychology is a new thing, like you're saying. Mm. Like, your mom sounds like she had quite a lot of empathy and quite a lot of curiosity and understanding with regards to how her children could have been different.
Yeah.
Right. But that sounds quite innate to your mom, like maybe a natural part of her. With a lot of people, it's not like that. And I think within the Black community, something like psychology is still very new.
Yeah.
It's very new. And I think even with people from maybe even the apartheid time, their experience of psychology would have been that, you know, psychology was how apartheid was actually constructed by these principles that are Western and go against, you know, the grain of what it means to be African or South African.
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely still a struggle when it comes to that. I mean, a lot of people in Black communities as well are very, I mean, we do have the community structure, but everyone still, a lot of people still have a, my problems are my problems, and you can't hang dirty laundry. People must not know certain things, which I think makes it hard for them to seek help.
Yep.
So what you will find, obviously, because Chris Hani, the spaces that I've worked in are medical hospitals. Mm. So what you would find is that people are referred to psychology by their doctors and in a sense forced to come to psychologists.
Yeah.
After the doctor has prescribed medication after medication for your blood pressure, ultimately they think, listen, this medication is not working. Yes. So maybe it's not a blood pressure problem.
Yep. Yep.
Maybe there's something psychological that's happening that you need to address. And that's how some people are then referred to psychology. So I think I think that's the primary challenge, that it is still something that is new, meaning that the bulk of the work that you do, even with your patients, is education.
Yes.
It's normalizing things like feelings.
Yeah.
Educating about what depression is versus what is a lack of faith versus what is a demon possession versus, you know, so there's so many, there's so much groundwork that still needs to be done. I think it just comes to the education part of it. But more and more people are reaching out for help.
Yeah.
I think the unfortunate thing is that people sometimes will only take mental health seriously once it's affected them personally or via a person that they know, like in their immediate social surroundings. So then only will we take suicide, because there's someone in our church who committed, who committed suicide. That's when we'll take it seriously. But I think, I mean, the education in and of itself is a great preventative measure.
Yeah, that's
But we are still there when it comes to, I think, the South African landscape, especially within the Black community. I mean, my counterparts, so I've worked both in state and in private practice. In private practice with a different clientele, there are different conversations that are being had there, different demographics and a different understanding. And I guess normalcy when it comes to saying, oh, I'm struggling, or I just want to understand myself better, versus in states where it's like, yo, doctor said I must come here because this blood pressure medication is not working.
Yeah.
I don't know why he said I must come here.
Yeah.
So help me.
I'm here.
Yeah, so I'm here because doctor said I must come here.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that we're still working on, but there have definitely been improvements. I mean, from the time that I started working to now.
Yeah. Okay. 2020. It seems like, I think that was almost like a turning point, if it were, for most people when it comes to understanding mental health and all those sort of stuff. Because I think it did, you know, put a lot of people on the corner in terms of job losses, you know, losing an income, all of those sort of stuff. And suddenly people were now thrust into this mental depression. I don't know whether 2020 unearthed it, and that's what I want to hear from you, or whether it just almost put everyone into this little corner, and all of a sudden we could hear people talking about mental health. It now became something that we are all talking about, familiarizing ourselves about and learning about it and all those sort of stuff. But before that, it seems like it was just a thing, and then COVID unearthed it. Would that be a correct way to, I suppose, characterize that?
Definitely. I mean, I think there are different responses that warrant talking about.
Yeah.
So the responses of the children,
yeah,
and the adults.
Yeah.
I definitely think for children, it was a terrifying period. I know I saw one child who had severe anxiety during that period, but that was because 7 children in his classroom had lost their parents.
Yo.
So I think for children, it was this unknown thing that, yeah, I mean, parents and teachers could really explain to them, you know, why granny couldn't breathe properly, why grandpa had passed away, why we haven't seen dad for 3 months. And I think for children, it was really, really a terrifying period that resulted in a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
There was a lot of fear around the unknown. What is this thing? What is it doing? Can I, or will I now die? What's going to happen to me? What's happening to my family?
Yeah.
So I think for children, it was just that shock of, sure, like something is scary that is happening. Something scary is happening. Our parents are trying to explain to us, but I mean, it doesn't really feel like words can really articulate what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah.
And then I think with adults, I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about what happens when everything is taken away and we have to slow down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think to me is a case study on how poor our coping mechanisms actually are, how unsustainable they are, how poor our social support systems are. And I think COVID just puts like a magnifying glass on that.
Yeah.
But what happens when you can't go to work and you can't distract yourself with work? You can't go to gym and distract yourself with gym.
Yeah.
You can't drink and distract yourself with alcohol, and you can't be with your friends and laugh about life. What happens when you're left with your own thoughts? And why was it that when a lot of people were left with their own thoughts, they became depressed or anxious or was happening there? And I think to me it was a turning point for a lot of adults to rethink how they had been doing life and some unsustainable practices that they had picked up that they were just doing in sort of as a matter of fact, this is routine, chronically doing things that may have been harmful, some things that may have not been mindful. And I think that sort of pause, that moment was that a lot of people grieving the life that they thought they had, life that, you know, they had known, and really welcoming a different, slower, more mindful way of living life.
When you say mindful, I just remember Demure or Demure. I don't know. There's something trending on social media about being mindful and being cutesy and demure.
Very demure.
Very mindful, you know. We're finding these words that are now very tricky to use them because you're caught between, am I sounding like a social media person? And you're in a meeting, but you can't say mindful anymore because everyone is just going to laugh and you're really trying to be serious, but mindful now and demure and all this sort of stuff that's happening in the social media space. But thank you so much for that insight. And I think that's quite interesting. I do think that there were some of us who deferred the whole thing about our mental health at the time and we pretended like we are okay. Do you find that we also have that thing as human beings to just defer things and pretend like we are okay?
Definitely. I mean, I think people have different coping mechanisms. There are coping mechanisms where people feel more comfortable to push something to the back of their head, like just don't think about it, push it down, downplay it, dismiss it. And that's called repression. That's something that happens even unconsciously. There are people who also take on avoidance. So I'm just going to ignore it. It won't be a big thing. So there are a lot of coping mechanisms that people use to cope. And that's normally as a result of whatever you've been doing since you were young.
Yeah.
I think it's only when maybe you receive feedback or something, a coping mechanism becomes very harmful that you think, oh, okay, maybe the sense of humor that I employ when something bad happens is not that helpful, or pushing things aside or compartmentalizing things or downplaying things is not helpful, or trying to distract myself or taking a nap every time I'm going through something.
Only
after a while some people realize that it's not helpful. Sure. But I think we do have different ways of coping with life and crisis and stress. Mm. And a lot of those patterns are behaviors that we pick up from childhood.
Yeah.
So whatever helped you survive your childhood and survive the parents and the environments that you grew up in will probably be the coping mechanisms that you still employ at like 22, 25.
Yes,
if you
yes.
haven't been considerate and thoughtful about whether those skills or mechanisms are still useful. So maybe when you were younger, it was helpful for you to be self-sufficient. You know, but maybe when you grow older, when you're 25 and 22 and you have a loving partner and reliable friends who are saying, let us help you carry your burden, then maybe being so self-sufficient and hyper-independent is no longer a way for you to, no longer a helpful way for you to cope with things because your surroundings have changed.
Okay, we've run out of time. And I was speaking to my producers just now to say, if it's so, it's okay with you, I think we need a part two because I've got quite a number of questions that I still needed to get through with them with you. But I don't want to end this one, even though we're out of time, without going through these two, which is, what would you say is the high point so far in your career, that one or two thing when you think about it, you're like, you know what, I think at this stage, this is where I saw that despite the challenges in the field, I think this is an event or a client, a patient that you went through, and like, without necessarily giving us the details of that session, but there must have been a high point where you look at it and you're like, thank God for driving me to this space, because I see God manifesting himself. And as I do this work, I can see that this is where I should have been.
Sure. Which one to choose?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a highlight can even be patients just tearing up, realizing certain things about themselves that they hadn't known that just change the trajectory of their lives. Just that light bulb moment of, wait a minute, like, what have I been doing? This is what this means. So I think that light bulb moment is something you definitely work towards as a psychologist with your clients and patients. And I think there are so many high points, really. I mean, someone coming in and telling you that they got that job, someone telling you, and telling you that, you know, they've fallen pregnant after infertility, fertility problems. I think when it comes to patients, there are definitely those daily session moments that a lot of people in their lives would not see. Yeah. Like, a lot of clients actually come into therapy and say, like, you're the first person I've told this. Mm. You're the only one who knows that this has happened to me. And having that kind of bond with people is definitely a highlight and a fulfilling highlight of the career. But I mean, professionally, there have been a number of things. The awards you mentioned, certain projects I've started that I think
Yeah.
Have also good highlights.
And that's what I'm saying. Those are the things I really want to get into, the awards and some of the platforms that you've started on social media, but we just don't have the time to do that. And I really want to get into those as well. So I'll hand you back to my producer on this one. And if you are quite comfortable that we have a part two, perhaps maybe we can then take it as a part two. But your parting shots, what would be your parting shots to, I suppose, a young person that want to get into this field?
I would say think about it deeply.
Okay.
It is a fulfilling career,
yeah.
But it is also a challenging career.
Yeah.
If you want to come into the career because you want to help people,
yeah.
I would interrogate what that means, because
okay.
I think a lot of people seek out the profession as a way of righting the wrongs that they have suffered.
Mm.
So if you have gone through your own trauma or if you have gone through your own mental health challenges, I don't think that means you should become a psychologist. So I would really...
Sure.
Say that, just interrogate why you are seeking out the career, because it is a career. It doesn't have to be a calling in order to be a career.
Yeah.
It is a profession where you get, where you learn skills, as well as if you were doing engineering.
Yeah.
So I think there is that pressure of it being a calling, that where people think, oh, this is what I need to be doing.
Mm.
But I think it's very unhealthy if you have a career that is centered around your trauma or your own challenges.
Ooh.
So really just interrogate what it means and why you are seeking out this career.
Mm. Sure. Thank you so much, ma'am, for your time. I really appreciate it. And I hope we can then pick up from here next time. But thank you so much for sharing and giving us some insights. And I think there's quite a lot of young people perhaps who are listening and maybe following you as well, who might have taken for themselves a little bit of one or two things. So where can people find you and where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Asanda_Madi.
Yeah.
Also on Instagram, you can follow me at journal_Q. So
yeah.
Q as in C-U-E.
Yeah.
And on TikTok, I'm also at Asanda Madi.
Thank you so much, ma'am, and may God bless you and enlarge your territory.
Thank you very much for those blessings, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Of course, that was Asanda Madi talking to us this evening, of course, about her life as well. We want to say thank you so much to her for, you know, opening up and sharing with us her own life and what she's been through. And as mentioned, you can find her across all those platforms. She is a clinical psychologist, the founder of Journal Q, and the NetBank Youth X Award winner of 2021. And these are some of the things I still want to unpack with her. But the greatest enemy at this point is time. But thank you so much to Asanda. Really, really appreciate and lovely conversation.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.